This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Well, it's Friday, time for us to review some of the week's top stories. And joining us now is our Week in Review panel. Peter Kanellis, the editorial page editor of the Boston Globe, is with us from the Globe. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Anthony.
Good to have you. And Craig Sandler, general manager of the State House News Service. Hi, Craig. Great to see you.
You too.
Happy New Year. In the flesh. Here you are.
That's right.
So let's dive right into the week's big political story, the New Hampshire primary. And I know we've analyzed it and talked about it, and it's gone on and on. Here's my quick thought about it. There was absolutely no surprise, not one. We thought Mitt Romney would win. He did. We thought it unlikely that Rick Santorum could repeat his Iowa success. He did not. We thought that a dramatic surge by John Huntsman appeared impossible, and it was.
Right.
Let me start with you, Peter. Do you recall a New Hampshire primary with less suspense than this one?
No, that's true. This was a very unsuspenseful New Hampshire primary. I can only say, though, that in the past, particularly because of the independent voters, there have been a lot of surprises. Mm-hmm. So, if anything, the lack of surprise this year was a surprise in itself.
There it is.
Yeah, there's the made-up point, you know?
No surprise it was surprising.
And I might add one more thing, and that is that Ron Paul's success getting 23% of the vote was actually quite a bit more than I thought he would get. So maybe that is the New Hampshire independents. It's just the fact that they sort of coalesced around Ron Paul instead of John Huntsman. Made it a little less of a story.
Sure. Craig Sandler, what was your take on what happened up there? Were you looking for a surprise, disappointed by a lack of a surprise? Because I think some of us in the media, you know, it's not that necessarily we root for candidates, but we root for sort of exciting storylines. So that surge from John Huntsman, it was going to happen. It was going to be sort of the Gary Hart, and it didn't happen.
Right, exactly. That's a good way to look at it. But the fact is that, you know, Walter Mondale was not organized the way Mitt Romney was in New Hampshire.
Yeah, he was organized.
Yeah. He got 39, right? So that was a little bit less than he really was expecting to do. Really, the takeaway from New Hampshire for me was the Republican Party needs to hope the unemployment rate doesn't drop below 8% because Obama's going to win that election. I mean, again, that was a reasonably tepid endorsement of Romney for all that. Yes, he did the expected, and it augurs poorly for the Republicans.
Well, we're going to get into a couple of themes about this possible Romney Obama confrontation. It's on to South Carolina now, and the one storyline that continues, or one of the big storylines that continues, is about Mitt Romney's role at Bain Capital. His critics, including some of his Republican rivals, say as head of Bain, he carved up companies, cut jobs, pocketed huge profits. Here's Mitt Romney yesterday in South Carolina pushing back against those claims.
There are some businesses that are growing and thriving, and we were fortunate enough to be able to be part of that in a small way. And there's some businesses that have to be cut back in order to survive and to try and make them stronger.
So that's Mitt Romney speaking yesterday. Peter Kanellis, there's a couple of ways to look at this. On the one hand, it seems people like Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich are sort of offering the Democrats this terrific club with which to hit Romney eventually. The other point of view is this is good for Mitt Romney to get this story out, sort of let it ooze, let people get used to it, and give him time to fashion an answer and a response to it before Barack Obama can really clobber him with it.
Yeah, I think that the media sort of introduces these issues, obsesses over these issues, and then abandons them at a certain point. And so there's a real danger sort of for the Obama campaign that this will inoculate in some way Romney on the whole Bain issue. The one thing that's a little bit different here, too, is that before Romney was sort of preparing for this by suggesting that the Democrats are playing the politics of envy, the Democrats are being divisive, they're playing on people's anger towards the rich, by having Republicans making the case against Bain, it blunts Romney's counterattack against Obama a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, Craig Sandler, what's your take on the politics of this?
We went through Bain in Massachusetts, both when Romney was running for Senate against Kennedy and when he was running for governor. And, you know, it had some traction, but not a lot. I mean, it had a good amount of traction in a union state. I guess that in the context of this election, though, if I were a Republican, I'd be saying, oh, yeah, Mitt, how many jobs did you create? Never even mind that maybe you were a turnaround specialist and you did what you had to do at this one company. How many jobs did you actually actually create when you're governor of Massachusetts. That's really telling. So,
and the answer to that would be?
Not that many. There were fewer jobs in Massachusetts after when Romney left than when he took office. And that's why I'm saying I would use it, because I think it's a potent issue. And the fact is, you hear Romney talking this week a lot about Bain and kind of over-responding and not using the defense. Look, I don't want to talk about the way in which I can run companies better, and I do sometimes, which sometimes means trimming. I want to talk about creating jobs. He's way off that message. And so, again, I think that the story of Mitt Romney as turnaround agent is a potent one, but this election is about creating jobs.
Well, let's assume, for the sake of argument, that Romney gets the nomination. It certainly looks like he's heading in that direction, and is facing Barack Obama next fall. Before the primary season began, we heard time and again that President Obama was vulnerable on the economy, and that a smart, get-it-done businessman like Mitt Romney could provide a serious challenge. But we have had a good look now at Mitt Romney as presidential candidate in New Hampshire. What do you think, Peter Kanellis? Has your view of him changed? Does he still pose a big challenge to Barack Obama?
I think he does. He does pose a strong challenge to Barack Obama. I think he is well positioned, actually, for the fall, and if he's able to go on and win the nomination without having to take more sort of outlying positions that Obama could attack him for, I think he's going to come out of this primary season pretty strong. I think that it's a little bit underrated how successful he's been in so many of these Republican debates. I think it has made him a better candidate, and I think that, just as people were saying months ago, that having a sort of centrist-style Republican businessman running against Obama is probably the best possible shot the Republicans have.
You know, I agree with that to a point, but here's the one sort of moderation of that argument that I would add. I covered Al Gore in 2000, and I can't help making a slight comparison to Mitt Romney, and this is just based on seeing him over the last few days. He runs a very good tight ship. He's run a virtually flawless campaign, but even at those rallies in the final hours of the New Hampshire primary, there wasn't electricity. He wasn't connecting with people, and that's what I saw again and again in 2000 with Al Gore. He had so much going for him, but he just couldn't light up a room and connect with people.
It feels like the official campaign of the Republican Party, a professional campaign. And, I think the guy, although I do agree with Peter, he's a very cogent alternative to Obama, but I actually feel like the economic arc might be getting away from him. If the housing market really does continue its glimmers of improvement, and if the economy continues to strengthen, I mean, how much do you really want to turn things around? You've already got somebody who can say, yeah, I put trillions in taxpayer dollars into turning the economy around. Guess what? It's turning around. So now what is Mitt Romney supposed to say? If the economy were really horrible and we were in a real mess, that's when Romney can say, look, this tax and spend, the liberal, the socialist is not solving your problems, and I can. But in the face of an improving economy, that is not a very potent message.
Well, we're still many months away, and a lot can happen in those months, both politically and in terms of the economy. Let's talk about money and campaign finance this week. Here are some big numbers. In the last quarter, Mitt Romney raised $24 million, Barack Obama $42 million. And in the Massachusetts race for the Senate, candidates are also raking it in. Senator Scott Brown raised $3.2 million. Democratic hopeful Elizabeth Warren raised $5.7 million. Scott Brown now has $13 million in his war chest. Elizabeth Warren, $6 million. Peter, this is shaping up to be a hugely expensive race, right?
Absolutely. And we're not even counting all the independent groups that are going to come in and spend millions and millions of dollars. So certainly this will be the most expensive race in Massachusetts history by a long, long, long shot. And it'll be very, very competitive. There's no question about it.
Craig, in this coming Senate race?
You know, it never fails to boggle my mind. The $24 million is, $240,000 a day? Can you imagine? You get up in the morning and say, I got to do my $200,000 a day. And they do. They spend hours and hours on the phone. And then on the level of the Senate race, they're going to spend frankly, having talked about my mind being all boggled and everything, having said that, they're spending an appropriate amount. This is a great race. It's great ideologically. They're great personalities. They've got something serious to talk about and real differences in every level. What the heck? Spend $10 million. It is a lot different than just marketing. They're not just spending it on marketing.
No,
I
agree.
That's kind of cool.
There's going to be a real debate and a real choice here. The other piece of financial news to come out this week was Elizabeth Warren's earnings. She made $430,000, excuse me, slight difference, as a Harvard Law professor in 2010, plus another $140,000 in legal consulting fees. Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, I thought you were referencing my adjunct professor salary.
But Peter, to what extent does this help fuel Scott Brown's effort to brand her as a Harvard elitist? I mean, that's a lot of dough.
I mean, it might fuel it, but I don't think it's going to stick because of who Elizabeth Warren is. Having seen her on the stump, there are many lines of attack you can envision against her, but the idea that she's not in touch with the middle class, that she's an elitist, that she's a snoot, she can blunt that very easily. I mean, her whole persona refutes that.
Yep.
Her life history refutes that. Her career advocating for middle class policies refutes that. I think that Brown would be wise to try a different line of attack.
Yeah, and this might sound crazy, but $4 million is a lot. $4 million raises eyebrows. $430,000. I mean, that's kind of successful. That's obviously upper middle class. Don't get me wrong, but
that's
I don't think it's the kind of thing that outrages people.
Right?
Yeah. But I don't.
That's not venture capitalist type money, right?
Yeah.
It's not venture capitalist type money, right? All right. Well, let's move on to the casino story in Massachusetts. Yesterday, representatives from MGM Resorts were in the small Western Massachusetts town of Brimfield, talking about their proposal to build a casino there. They promised 3,000 permanent jobs plus more construction jobs over the next 3 years. Here's MGM Chairman Jim Murren.
We believe philosophically that it is not for us to say what a community should want or not want. And we've lost some opportunities because some would say we're perhaps not as aggressive as other people, not as audacious and flashy.
So, Craig, we've heard this. We won't do what the community doesn't want recently in Foxborough, where casino mogul Steve Wynn is proposing to build a casino. There's been a lot of opposition there. Any reason why Brimfield may be different?
Well, sure. I mean, to take that question at face value, absolutely. I mean, just because of process. If you think even in Palmer, which is close by, it was the casino operator that famously set up the office years ago to promote their interests in Palmer, which could align with the interests of the citizenry. That's as opposed to a landowner who kind of transparently says, I'd like to sell my land to a casino and let me talk to all of you stakeholders over years to round up your consensus about whether this could really work. Or, of course, Wynn flying in from Vegas, tipping off the globe when it suited his purposes, and he and Kraft going on a relatively ill-fated and somewhat awkward, press campaign, really, really different than that process.
Different feel this time. Yeah. And Peter, Brimfield, of course, was one of the towns devastated by a tornado this summer. It's also a tiny town, just 3,500 people live there. Could a casino be an important economic lifeline out there?
It could. I think more even than Foxborough, and certainly more than Suffolk Downs for the community that surrounds it. However, I would also add that, since there have to be referendums on these casinos, it doesn't behoove any developer to say, I'm going to ram it down your throat. They're all sounding very pious about, we respect the community and we respect the community's judgment. So there's no reason why MGM would say anything but, we want to defer to the community.
Well, but this guy was operating a lot closer to the ground. I'm talking about the landowner more than the developer. Was operating a lot closer to the ground, one-on-one, for a long, long time. Jimmy Carter, let's say, in Iowa. That's too much of a stretch, but I'm saying that he seems to have used the kind of strategy that really does pay dividends, so to speak.
Let's move on to, finally today, state budget. This week, state budget officials announced the revenue projection for the state's 2013 fiscal year. Mixed report, projected revenue is up by 4.5%. That's the good news. But it's not enough to keep up with inflation in several social safety net programs like health care. Here's Administration and Finance Secretary Jay Gonzalez explaining what that will mean for next year's budget.
many, many people are going to see level funded budgets, and in some cases cuts in budgets, and in some cases even elimination of funding. So it's going to be another tough year.
Craig Sandler, what do you expect that to mean, another tough year?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to be cavalier, and I think I can't avoid it, unfortunately, because I don't, you know, I don't get hurt when three home care workers are laid off. Having said that, that doesn't sound that bad. And 4.5% sounds great. It's going to actually be a much, much better year than we've seen in a long time. State is in pretty solid shape, has been for a long time. It's been one of the underreported stories, how well we've come through all of this. And again, at the risk of being blithe, everything that happened this week was pleasing and encouraging to me as a long-standing budget dork. People out there should really be encouraged by the prospects of what and those numbers.
Peter Canales, I don't know if you want to compete with Craig Sandler as being a long-standing budget dork, but
I would say I agree with Craig that Jay Gonzalez is trying to sort of set a tone that will allow them to make some cuts without having a lot of political blowback. If they came out and said this is pretty good, then every time they try to make a cut, there'll be people screaming back at them. So they want to send a message of austerity. I also will go further and say I think it's appropriate to send a message of austerity. I don't think we just skated through this time. There were a lot of, you know, rainy day funds and stimulus funds and things like that that kind of helped the economy along or helped the state budget along. And we should be looking for ways to save. And we have a terrible problem at the T. So
yeah, you're right about
conveying
that,
the idea that you know, that things are going to be good in the state is probably sending the wrong message. So Gonzalez was sending the right message even if he was overdoing it a bit.
yeah, no, that's well said, and particularly about the T. That is a hellacious problem.
All right, gentlemen. Yep. So we have time to end the show and to end this week with our weekly hubbub, that story that didn't quite make it above the fold, maybe not even on the front page. Megna, let me bring you back in here. Tell us your hubbub this week.
My hubbub is so far off the front page, I'm not even sure if it was in an actual paper.
It's the kind we like.
Yep.
So as many, many weeks ago, I don't know if you gentlemen remember, but I had a hubbub about Claire Butcher, who was the 80-year-old woman in Lynn who was facing criminal charges for feeding birds in a city park.
Yep.
In Lynn, because people were complaining that she was feeding them and so many birds were being attracted to the park that they were leaving a mess that was a threat to the environment and public safety and health. Well, she could have faced 30 days in jail, this poor old woman, for feeding the birds. But it turns out Lynn has decided, an Essex prosecutor has decided, that they will drop the charges and maybe pursue civil remedies. But it looks like for now that Claire Butcher is okay. And she stands by her assertion that in the end, the only thing she was guilty of was, quote, a great love of animals.
Oh,
that's a sweet one. Nice one to end the week on. Yeah. Peter Canales, what's your hubbub?
I don't know if you noticed in the New York Times a couple of days ago, there was a piece disclosing that a well-known doctor in Boston, or a one-time well-known doctor in Boston, Mary Ellen Avery, had died a while ago, but it had gone just completely unnoticed, and they were sort of resurrecting this fact because she had been the first female physician-in-chief at Children's Hospital, which is a nice accomplishment. But what was sort of undernoted is that she also was the pioneer who discovered ways to clear the respiratory passages of premature babies and may have saved literally millions of babies over the years. So, you know, in a state with a heavy medical community, I think that even in this state, that ranks as a big accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Great story. Craig Sandler, your turn. And you have 38 and a half seconds to say.
Thank you for letting me know. Anyway, no, I'll just point out that this was actually news to me, and that is that with all the talk of primaries lately, I had no idea how much it costs to run the Massachusetts primary, which, as we all know, is March 6th, right?
That's right.
By the way, Romney and Obama are going to win. Anyway, I looked up the cost. It's $3.5 million for a primary, and taxpayer money for a primary that has always, you know, been able to be summed up in one word.
Democrats
secondary.
Win. Yeah, secondary.
Yeah, that's its importance.
Yeah. Yeah, talk about a primary with no surprise.
Yeah.
Well, here's my my hubbub this week. It's about the Boston police reversing their position in the Simon Glick case. You all recall back in October 2007, Glick was on Boston Common. He used his cell phone to film police officers making an arrest because he said they were using excessive force. He was arrested, charged with unlawful wiretap and interfering with an arrest. Glick was vindicated 6 months ago by the first U.S. Court of Appeals, which ruled that citizens have the right to record police officers while they perform their duty. So that's a positive development for those who favor an open society. This week, the Boston Police Department reversed themselves because they had originally stood by the way their officers handled Glick. But this week, they said the two officers who arrested him showed poor judgment, will be disciplined. So I think that, too, suggests a positive development for those who favor an open society. So, Craig Sandler, General Manager of the State House News Service, thanks so much for being here. Have a great weekend.
You too.
And Peter Canellos, Editorial Page Editor of the Boston Globe. Good to have you, and great weekend to you.
Thanks. Same to you.
Well, that's it for this week. But Monday on the show, one that got away, a Berklee College of Music grad who bailed on Boston for Nashville. You're hearing her music right now. Her name is Maddie Diaz.
And Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.